from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, what do younger Americans think about traditional values? Big business picks social justice over the customer. And the University of Vermont Medical Center violates a nurse's civil rights. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. In a recent Wall Street Journal NBC News survey, young people rated patriotism, religion, and having children as less important to them than young people did two decades ago. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to discuss the results of the survey is Dr. David Bratt, Liberty University's Dean of the School of Business and former Republican Congressman.
Dave, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, great to be on. Thanks, Tony.
When I see this decline, considering what has been happening in our education system for the last 50 years, along with the leftward push of Hollywood, I'm actually surprised that the drop is not more precipitous, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think we're tracking on the same wavelength. And I just look at this latest Wall Street Journal polls over the last 20 years. And in that 20 years or so, I mean, you see the move from liberals, right? Democrats used to be liberals, to now this movement on the hard left. And so if you look back at like a JFK, you know, there wasn't any question back then about patriotism or religion or having children. The Kennedys, you know, the family was huge. The Catholic religion was huge. Patriotism, Kennedy ran on it. And so it's that shift from that liberal philosophy to this hard left deconstruction of getting rid of all American institutions. And you see that in all the leading universities. And in K-12, we won't even teach love, which was the dominant virtue for 2,000 years in Western Civ. And so you're right. It's education, and it's sinking in, and now we're paying the price.
Yeah, you think 1962, 63, prayer kicked out of our schools, the Bible kicked out. And so in this survey, we see 61% cite patriotism as very important to them. That's down 9 percentage points from 1998. Religion, 50% cite religion. That's down 12 percentage points. And 43% placed a high value on having children. That's down 16 points from 1998. Now, clearly, as you say, the education, the culture influencing these young people. But one thing, and I'm not going to argue that this is not a sign of a downward trajectory. I mean, that's clear. But I will say this, and I think you can speak to this as well, Dave, that these polls, while they do show trends, they're also a snapshot. And when we look at young people, we know that they're not fixed in that ideology forever. Some of them actually mature and get a brain.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. If you look at some of it, you know, the willingness of young people to have kids, some of that could just be economics. And then on the, you know, the question of religion, it's interesting that if you see the Deloitte poll or the Wall Street Journal poll, they're fairly secular institutions themselves, so they might not be asking the right questions, like, what do you think about God? Not religion, but do you have faith in God, and which God? And then, because that's the first principle among all of them. And on the family, similarly, the kids are experiencing high levels of anxiety and depression, et cetera. I wish these polls would get at that a little bit more, dig a little deeper into what drives meaning in their lives. But unfortunately, the pollsters, I don't think, understand the depth of the situation as well.
Good point. I mean, these words have definitions, and it's important to work with the right definitions. I will say, I'm troubled by this, but I'm actually encouraged to some degree that we still have this large of a segment of our society that sees the value of patriotism, that sees the importance of religion public in the public space, as well as the importance of the family. Yes, it's declining, but with all of the forces that have been pushing against it, it shows how resilient these elements are and how people understand how essential, even inherently, maybe not academically do they understand this, but inherently they understand that these are important elements to the American society.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that residual piece is still fairly strong even in Europe, which is, you know, declined further than we have, if you go over there and get in a debate with someone over there, just, you know, without letting them know where you stand, they'll say, well, of course we care for the poor. And you ask the European, well, why do you care for the poor? And I say, are you a religious person? Are you Christian? No. You just know you ought to do that. I say, well, why ought you to do that? And they don't have a self-reflective awareness of where it's coming up. But the Judeo-Christian trajectory over 2,000 years is something that's strong. And so it's still enduring, but we're chipping away gradually. And so we still have enough to work with. And we just all have to get back at it, right? My Republican friends, sometimes we go back to the Declaration, the Constitution, all hugely important. And we go back to balanced budget amendments and term limits and think those are the most important pieces. But the Judeo-Christian tradition and the family, right, choosing the Jewish family overneath the Greek city-state, those were the key decisions that brought us all the rest of those first principles. Mm-hmm. And so it's time to get back to history. The Judeo-Christian tradition gave us, you know, Magna Carta and the Reformation, the Enlightenment, and everything we have.
Now, Dave, you know, we've talked about the importance of these things, the contributing factors. But, you know, I on this program, I don't like to just tell people a problem without giving them a solution. And
right.
Oftentimes we say, we look and say, well, you know, I voted for this person, let them fix it. We all have a part in working on this. This is important because this is the future of our freedom, our liberty, the future of this country that's at stake in this debate and this understanding. And we all have a part to play in it. What can, I mean, you're there now at an institution of higher learning, which I'm very grateful for Liberty University because it's a huge part of my life. In actually steering me toward government. I was in business and ended up in government as a result of the instruction I got at Liberty because Dr. Falwell required every student to take government classes. And so it was very instrumental
right.
in shaping my views. But what can parents do to counteract the forces at play in our public schools and in the broader culture?
Yeah, well, if you just look back at our founders and de Tocqueville and all the observers, the Christianity gave us basically the rough parameters for religion, for philosophy. Christianity founded Oxford, Cambridge, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and the local school system was dictated by Christian. We got to get back to all that. The parents need to get back to the school board. If you got 3 out of 5 votes on a school board, you win. So we need to push back. The donors that are funding these liberal universities need to push back. And lastly, the millennials that we have in our families, get these young millennials. They're more tech savvy than all of us adults. Put them to work in the church on newsletters, writing op-eds, and getting their minds engaged. And they're leading the charge right now. The students at Liberty in IT and IS and cyber are just phenomenal. They have great minds, and we need to put them to work in the public square a little bit.
And it can, as you pointed out, 5 members on a school board, you get 3 and you can control the school board. And winning a school board race is, you know, I'm not going to say it doesn't take work, but it can be done
yep.
with almost no money and just a commitment of time. And if you're working through a local church, I mean, you've got a campaign team right there. These things can be done.
Yep. Yeah, and in the church is the best economic model because you got the supply side, right? You got the firms and the CEOs in the church, and you got the poor folks or
right.
some folks who've been displaced by the economy that need a job.
Right.
Well, you got a labor market right there in the church, and then you put that to work with your K-12, and then you're a model for the whole country, right? If one local school district sticks out like a sore thumb, everyone in the country will copy it. And so
yeah.
that's what we got to do. We got to find that shining star and find that model that works on a Christian basis again, and boom, it'll take off like crazy.
As long as we have breath, we have hope. And
you got
there
it.
Is hope. There is hope. Dave Bratt, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us, and give my best to all our friends on campus there at Liberty.
Will do. God bless you for all the work you do, Tony.
You can find out more about David Bratt as well as Liberty University when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for our daily update. It's an email we send out sharing what's going on in Washington, D.C. Again, that's at TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
All Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Then come join us at FRC Action's Values Voters Summit in D.C. From October 11th to the 13th, hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Oliver North, Dana Lash, and congressional leaders. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. According to a Breitbart.com article earlier this week, corporate leaders such as Amazon's Jeff Bezos and Apple's Tim Cook have signed on to a statement that, quote, revises a longstanding principle that corporations primarily exist to serve the interests of their shareholders, end quote. Joining Tony Perkins with his analysis of this change is nationally syndicated radio host and biblical investing expert, Dan Celia.
Dan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, I appreciate you joining me. I know you do 3 hours of radio every day, heard over on over more than 650 stations, so that's a lot of radio to do. But I want to thank you for taking time out. I know you addressed this issue last week, but these corporations, when they're talking about more social responsibility, that should have Christians and conservatives concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Frankly, you should have all their stockholders concerned as well. I think it's very irresponsible, you know, to remove the top priority as being adding value to the bottom line. And it's one of the things that I've been railing against for a long time, Tony. You know, I think this is just incredibly irresponsible that these CEOs will take a look at socially responsible issues and put them before their responsibilities to stockholders. And, you know, I talked last week about Dick's Sporting Goods as a good example, who decided it's just not politically correct to be selling hunting gear and guns. And so they're removing what they have left out of 150 stores. Well, first of all, when you're in the retail business like you're in today, your job is to get people in your store. That's your number one goal and priority. And it's irresponsible to do anything different that is going to hurt that very thing and hurt stockholders. And I think it's just amazing, for the sake of their ideological slant and the ideological blinders that these CEOs have on and don't have the backbone to stand up to the left. So, you know, here's a situation, Tony, where not that particular Dick's, but we know right now we've got Planned Parenthood in a bind because they need money, you know, because they're losing some of their government money. What are they going to do? They're going to go to corporations, and corporations are going to take this on as a socially responsible thing to do to help Planned Parenthood continuing to murder babies is going to be a socially responsible thing to do because it's socially acceptable by so many. And that's what we're going to see more and more of.
And with the profits yeah, that are derived from the business that we do with these companies.
Exactly. Exactly. And their profits are supposed to go back to either expand their businesses and do what they do better. That's their job, right, to bring value to the bottom line and the stockholder.
Let me stop you right there, Dan.
Yep.
Because there is in today's society where, you know, a large percentage of young people have bought into to socialism, there is this lack of understanding of the free market system and what one is supposed to do with what they've been entrusted with, in this case, shareholders. Let me use an example. In Matthew 25, where Jesus talks about the master giving to the various servants a certain amount of talents to be invested, the servants that are rewarded are not the ones that engage in some kind of socially responsible, politically correct activity. The ones he rewarded are the ones who bring a return on what they've been given.
Yes. And that's what we would expect to do as biblically responsible investors, to invest in companies that are working to do whatever it is they do, build bulldozers, flip hamburgers, or whatever it might be, and to do it with the full power and abilities of their employees and their leadership, not to get distracted by ideology to do what is politically or socially correct, which in many cases is going to be against the principles that we stand for, that you just outlined.
And Dan, there's a role here. If these corporate CEOs want to become activists with the profits derived from the business that they do with Americans, American consumers need to keep that in mind when they, A, do business with these companies, and B, as you pointed out, when they invest in these companies. So we need to make sure we're spending money, investing money in companies that actually do what they say they're going to do and stay out of the culture wars.
Exactly. And I, you know, when I talk to these CEOs, I tell them, look, I'm not asking you to support the right. I'm asking you not to support the left or the right. I'm asking you to do what you are supposed to be doing for your stockholders, for people that are investing in your company, and just be able to say no. And that is the problem. You know, I had a conversation with a big company, I won't mention the name, who now is back on my list. They changed, but it was involving the Boy Scouts some years ago, and I took them off my list. And before I had that conversation, I said, look, your CEO, they said to me, Dan, you have to understand, this is a very hot topic for our CEO. I said, I have a problem with that. He made $43 million last year and another $72 million in bonus. Do it with his own money. If he loves the agenda so much and he wants to support it, do it with his own money. Don't do it with my money because I'm a stockholder.
You can find out more about Dan Celia when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, look for ways that you can join us for this year's Values Voter Summit coming up in October. I'll be there at Radio Row, and many of the guests you hear on this program will be there as well. You can find out more at TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Have you subscribed to Tony Perkins' Washington Update yet? This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. Learn more and subscribe to these must-read stories by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
We live in a time of great political division, and this divisiveness can be incredibly discouraging. It makes it very tempting for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. But Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, including how they engage in politics. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. Visit frc.org/engage to learn more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday morning, the Office for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services issued a notice of violation letter finding that the University of Vermont Medical Center broke the law by forcing a nurse to assist in an elective abortion procedure over the nurse's objections. Joining guest host Sarah Perry is Roger Severino, Director of the Office of Civil Rights for Health and Human Services.
Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
So on May 9th of last year, a nurse at the University of Vermont Medical Center filed a conscience and religious discrimination complaint with the Office of Civil Rights and claimed, in short, that the University of Vermont Medical Center had tricked her into showing up for an abortion procedure. Can you tell us a little bit about the backstory here?
That's right. This is a tragic case that never should have happened in this day and age in America. This was a nurse who was dedicated to help saving lives, who was in fact coerced into participating in the taking of life through an abortion. She had registered her objections to participating in abortions, yet the University of Vermont Medical Center decided in 2017 to start doing elective abortions without informing staff. And this nurse was actually scheduled for a procedure that she thought was related to a miscarriage, but was in fact told when she arrived, please don't hate me, by the doctor. Mm-hmm. Because the doctor knew that this was going to be an abortion and that this nurse was going to be put in a horrendous position where she would face a crisis of conscience. In that very moment, she tried to raise her objection again to see if she could be replaced. And she could have actually been replaced, even at that late hour, with somebody else who would have been willing to do it, yet the hospital refused. And this is on pain of potentially losing her job or being reported to licensing bodies, which would threaten her ability to practice medicine at all. And put in that horrendous situation, she gave in, and it has traumatized her. This is a real moral injury that, regardless of what you think about Roe v. Wade or the legality of abortion, the American people have spoken in a unified voice that we cannot coerce people to participate in abortions, to pay for abortions, to refer for abortions, to cover abortions against their will. And that's just precisely what happened here. And that is a quintessential violation, not only of common justice, but of federal law that my office, the Office for Civil Rights, is charged with enforcing.
You also found that the University of Vermont Medical Center had actually implemented discriminatory policies of assigning or requiring employees to assist abortions, even after those employees had recorded their religious or moral objection. So they actually maintained a list of those individuals who had a conscience objection and yet flagrantly disregarded the list.
Yes, in the particular nurse's instance, it was absolutely clear what happened. However, they still had a policy in place, even after this incident, that specifically contemplated a situation where under UVMMC, the hospital's own discretion, they could decide what their staffing needs would be in any particular moment and could require anybody, regardless of whether or not they put in a objection, whether they put it in writing, whether they, whatever, they could still require them to undergo participate in the procedure despite their objections. The burden that is put on the hospital by the law to accommodate all medical staff on this issue. The church amendments were passed right after Roe v. Wade to make clear that medical professionals should never be put in that position. If there's a staffing concern, the duty is on the hospital to create the proper staff rotation to do whatever services they want to provide. And by the way, the hospital had not been providing elective abortion services until 2017. So one option for every hospital is to not provide abortion services. They're not required. Another option is to create proper staffing protocols to make sure that this never happens and nobody's put in this position if they have an objection. And the third option is to not receive federal funds. If you don't want the strings that are attached that go with our laws designed to protect conscience, you also have that option. Here, the University Medical Center did the wrong thing and did the coercion and did not change their policy to come into compliance. And our main purpose is to get compliance with the law. That is really what we're seeking here. And with our notice of violation, we've put the University of Vermont Medical Center on notice as to the violations, as to the ongoing nature of their policies being in violation of the law. And we're giving another opportunity to come into compliance, or else they will be referred to the funding components, which they received $1.6 million over the last 3 years from the Health Resources Services Administration at HHS. We always, always seek voluntary compliance before we escalate to a procedure that could eventually lead to revocation of federal funds. But in any event, the law has to be complied with, and we're hoping that with this notice, they will finally come into compliance.
Have the administrative officials here at University of Vermont Medical Center, have they answered in any way, have they offered any defense to the claim that there was an abuse, a violation of these church amendments in the United States Code? Any response at all?
They have not taken appropriate responsibility for their actions. They need to acknowledge the violation by changing their policies. What we're looking for is compliance, and we're giving them every chance to respond to our document requests, but they have been incomplete. They have not been fully cooperative. We offered to interview their staff and went out there, made ourselves available. They declined our offer for us to interview their staff. So we proceeded with our investigation as we were required to do. The laws have meaning only if they are enforced. So we proceeded with our investigation, interviewed several folks that were intimately familiar with what happened, complainants, et cetera, and got the necessary information to substantiate this finding of violation. It's pretty black and white under the law. The law says if you receive federal funds, you cannot force doctors or nurses to perform abortions, period. And that was this is an outrageous violation of that fundamental right. And it's really a matter of common decency. You don't put people in that position when they have informed you that it goes so deeply against your religious beliefs and moral convictions, especially when we're talking about doctors and nurses that really just want to heal people and help people.
Now, in your discussions, in your investigation with this nurse, has she given you any indication as to what her particular emotional fallouts have been on this?
This is a sad, tragic story, and this is a universal problem when a person is faced with this crisis of conscience. We do not require, for example, doctors to assist in executions, and pharmacists aren't required to put the lethal cocktail together. Doctors are not required to perform assisted suicides. We should also have that same respect and solicitude when it comes to the taking of life in abortion. And that is actually the state of the law. And I'm glad that I'm privileged to be the leader of a Office for Civil Rights that now has a conscience and religious freedom division dedicated specifically to enforcing our conscience and religious freedom laws, just like every other civil right. This has been missing for far too long, where we now have a culture where doctors, nurses, and hospital administrators think that somehow this is okay, or think that somehow this does not violate federal law when it does. And we're doing a lot to raise the profile of these issues to make sure that, no, this is actually against the law, and that we are here to enforce the law. And we welcome people to submit complaints to us, hhs.gov/OCR. That's for Office for Civil Rights. If you feel that your conscience and religious freedom rights have been violated, health information privacy rights have been violated, or your civil rights generally have been violated, we welcome everybody to submit their complaints. That's the only way we're going to be able to address these issues and to start, you know, changing the underlying culture that led to such a tragic situation as was present in this case.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkiel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.